The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the topic I thought of speaking about today is exploring what it means to open to the human experience of anxiety, worry, and fear. I have definitely been feeling anxiety in my own experience through this political season. I think there's a lot of it going around right now. So I thought what I'd like to do is explore with you kind of a distinction, you know, that what we're practicing here is mindfulness, right? We're practicing mindfulness, and we can be aware, we can be mindful of anything, and yet there's a difference. It's a certain kind of mindfulness we're interested in here. It's a kind of mindfulness that's interested in what does it mean to be a human being that's feeling anxious or worried or fearful, rather than being anxious or worried or fearful. So there's a way in which, you know, if you go to people on the street and just say, hey, are you feeling anxious right now? You know, some of them might say, yeah, do you know you're feeling anxious? Yeah, I know I'm feeling anxious, you know, and yet what's happening in their minds is not that they're aware of the human experience of being anxious, but they're aware of their particular anxieties. That the focus is more on why we're anxious and what to do about that anxiousness or that worry or that fear. So there's a difference, there's a vast difference between the awareness that we're anxious and being involved in the anxiety, so being anxious, and what I'll say, being with anxiety. Being with, kind of with curiosity, what is it like to be a human being feeling this way? So I group these together, anxiety, worry, and fear. There's some similarities to them, but they're also different. You know, some, I was looking this morning for kind of the psychological definitions of these states, and they put them on a spectrum often. So they put worry at the bottom, and then anxiety, and then fear, and then dread and terror, you know, kind of in that kind of way. But I do think it's helpful to, because any of them can be strong. Like worry can be overwhelming. Or anxiety can be overwhelming, and it doesn't really feel like fear. So I think it's useful to recognize the differences or the distinctions between them and to understand something about these states of mind. And again, we're interested in understanding something about them so that we can... So why? That's a good question. You know, why would I want to understand the human experience of anxiety? Why? I mean, it's really uncomfortable, right? We open to the feeling of anxiety. It feels really uncomfortable. Why would I want to be with that? Well, it takes a little bit of a leap of faith, but it actually doesn't take very long to understand and through this practice to begin to understand the value, the benefit of why it's useful to bring that kind of curiosity to anxiety. It does a couple of things. You know, first of all, there's a shift. You know, if we're being anxious, we are caught in that state. We are really really involved in it, and we're trying to figure out what to do about it. And there's a lot of tension that's in the system. You know, it's actually not so helpful for our systems to stay in a state of anxiety for long periods of time. It kind of wears the system down. So when we're anxious, when we're being anxious, we are kind of involved in that experience. when we explore what it means to be curious, what does it feel like to be a human being that feels anxious? We can recognize a shift that happens there. There's a little, it's like the container gets bigger. Maybe what part of what happens is that we realize anxiety is not the whole world, that there's more to our experience than the anxiety, and some of that is that we can know it. We can be aware. Yes, this is what this uncomfortable experience is like. As we begin to trust, even to trust, maybe it's useful to make this kind of shift. Pretty quickly, we can begin to experience a little bit of a relief or a release as we move from being anxious or fearful or worried to knowing or being with anxiety or fear or worry. There's a felt sense, the system relaxes a little bit. And it can even relax a lot. It can. The stronger that mindfulness is, the more ease there can be, even in the midst of knowing something like anxiety or worry or fear. And so immediately we can begin to get some feedback that actually this is helpful. It's helpful to take this stance of curiosity rather than involvement. So we get that feedback. We recognize for ourselves the value, and that kind of can encourage us to continue to explore this. We also see that when we're caught in the anxiety or worry or fear, it's like it's escalating. When we become aware of it, there's more of a sense of capacity for response rather than reaction. And this is another piece of the power of the mindfulness around these states, that as we become aware of them through mindfulness, through this perspective, what's the human experience of anxiety? There's a more possibility for choosing to act in a way that comes from compassion or kindness or wisdom, rather than from the reactivity of the anxiety itself. So again, it gives us more space to have more of our minds involved in moving forward with decisions. I would say that when we're caught by anxiety or worry or fear, our universe collapses to that. And as we become mindful, it's like our universe gets a little bigger. We can see more possibilities. We may still know that the anxiety's there, and then maybe there's something that needs to be taken care of, but we're not driven by the anxiety itself. There's more possibility for other information to inform and help us to move forward. So partly, we may just have to trust that it's useful to be aware of the anxiety or worry or fear at first. And it's always necessary, and I'll speak about this a little later as we get a little further into how to do this, how to work with this. There's always the times when we explore what does it mean to be with the human experience of something. We might explore, okay, yep, anxiety, can I be with this? And then immediately, boom, no, we're caught back in the anxiety. It's like the anxiety is stronger than our capacity to be mindful. The anxiety is like a tsunami, and the mindfulness is like a little trickle. It's like, whew, we're overwhelmed, we're swamped. And so we need to learn some tools of how to skillfully navigate that kind of situation. And often it means stepping away from the anxiety, putting your attention on something else, not trying to be with the human experience of anxiety. So sometimes that is actually the skillful means. But it's helpful to learn, because there will be times when we can be with these states, times when we can be curious about them. And that practice of, or that possibility of learning to be aware of these states, maybe when they're not so tsunami-like, it grows our capacity to be with them. And so our capacity, the mindfulness gets stronger and can meet stronger levels of the fear and the anxiety. So, you know, different kinds of fear, different flavors, let's say, different flavors of this state. Fear itself is really the response, the human response to a perceived threat. So when there's the sense that there's something dangerous or threatening in our environment, fear is the natural result. Fear is the response to that. You know, this is a very helpful part of our being that has kept us as human beings alive. You know, that when we were, just beginning as a species, it was really useful to have that adrenaline rush if a lion is approaching us. It's like, yes, run, or no, maybe not run, but, freeze, so the response to fear has kept us alive. So there's a naturalness to the emotion in the face of threat. So this is, and if there's an immediate kind of primal fear, I've had this happen a few times in my life. Like one time I was at Spirit Rock and it was dusk. So it was kind of, the light was dim and, things were in shadows and things like that. And I was walking on one of the paths and I saw a crack in the sidewalk. And I just stepped toward the crack and that crack coiled up and became a rattlesnake. So it was like, boom, there was primal fear in that moment. And I was present. I think I was on retreat. I was present and I just watched this fear arise, and then I watched what the being did. This being, in that state of primal fear, slowly backed away from the snake. This was skillful. This was useful. I didn't actually have to decide to do it. It's like this is what arose. That's what happened. So this kind of fear, this kind of primal fear, when we're in a state of immediate threat like that, this kind of primal fear actually can bring us right into the present moment. I've heard stories of people who were in car accidents, and it's like that experience of being hit in the car. It's like they said they just became so completely present. It was like the entirety of the experience was very clearly known. And so this kind of fear is not so much what I'm going to be exploring today. Because this kind of fear is just the human, what keeps us alive as human beings, and what it's a function of our system. But what happens? Please come in. You're welcome. This what happens in our system? As I said, the fear is a response to perceived threat, and so sometimes those threats are real, like the lion or the snake or being in a car accident. They're right there, they're present. And sometimes those perceived threats are creations of our mind. That we think there's something dangerous. And this happens, I think, more and more in our as we kind of move away from the kind of life or death, as our species has moved away from the life or death everyday kind of situations we have to respond to, more and more our mind is in the place of constructing things to be afraid of, constructing fear, and then reacting out of that fear to a perceived threat, which is not an actual threat. This is happening a lot. We can see this in our in how many black men are being killed by police officers as they are raising their hands This happened on Friday. A black man was raising his hands, and he was shot and killed. My sense of what might have been happening for the officer is raising hands. Oh no, the person may have a gun in their hand. Oh no, you know. So the perceived, it was a perceived threat, and this we've got to begin to be curious in our society about these perceived threats, and to begin to question or to be curious about what is the source of those. So it's not not just swept under the rug. So these kinds of things happen to all of us. They happen to all of us. We have experiences where we perceive a threat rather than there being an actual threat. And so mindfulness helps us here. It helps us to recognize what's actually happening as opposed to what our views and opinions and ideas are laying on top of the situation that creates the perception that there's a threat. So this is a big part of exploring fear. You know, when we are experiencing the arising of fear, it can be useful in that moment with some mindfulness to check in. What's actually happening here, and what are the beliefs happening? What are the beliefs that are going on? So that, much of our relationship to fear in our culture these days has to do not so much with what's actually going on, with something that's actually threatening, but with our perception based on erroneous, often, views, opinions, ideas, misunderstandings. So this is a very important piece of information to know about fear. Much of the time when we're experiencing fear, it's not based in an actual threat. It's based in a threat created in our minds. We can also, of course, experience fear around and get caught in fear around actual threats that are in our lives. For instance, if we're diagnosed with a life-threatening disease, that's an actual threat in our life. We may not be experiencing any direct symptoms at this moment, or they may be minimal. And yet, each time we experience a little twinge here or a little twinge there, that reminds us of the diagnosis, and fear can come. So again, there's a thought process involved in the creation of fear often, even when there's an actual threat in our lives. It's often not so much that we're responding directly to the threat, but we're responding to our thoughts about it, our ideas about it. This is a really important piece of information for us. So that's a little about fear. Anxiety, my understanding, is that anxiety isn't so much about an actual threat of some kind. It's actually, anxiety is more about the unknown. We would have fear if we know we have a diagnosis of cancer. We might have anxiety if we're experiencing vague symptoms and we don't know what's going on. So anxiety is more about the not knowing. It's about being uncomfortable with ambiguity and uncertainty. This can get very strong, this kind of feeling. And again, it can be based on there's a purpose for these feelings in our human experience. The anxiety can be based on the kind of recognition that something is uncertain, maybe it's useful to start understanding some of the information to fill in the gaps of that uncertainty. So that anxiety might be a kind of a pointer to something needs to be explored, or something needs to be known, something needs to be checked out. And yet again, very often our anxiety is not so much about, it's more of a construct of the mind. That, you know, actually we may be, so here's a way anxiety gets constructed through worry. And worry is thoughts about things we're uncertain about. So worry and anxiety, I think, are related. But worry, the anxiety is the feeling, and worry are the thoughts. It's the mind in that loop. I got to do this. What can I do? How am I going to do this? What am I going to figure out? And we're often driven nuts by that, too. So sometimes what happens, how anxiety is created, actually, is we experience something that we maybe aren't quite sure about. So we're in sitting meditation. We feel a twinge of pain in the knee. And the mind feels, we feel that, and then we start thinking about it. Oh, there's a twinge of pain in the knee. Oh, I wonder how that, you know, what's going on there. And I've been feeling that pain in the knee since we took that drive last week, and I wonder if I tore my ACL, and oh no, what am I going to, oh no, I probably am going to have surgery. And the thinking process, the worry process, has actually generated a feeling of anxiety. So this is again, it's a process that's useful to recognize, to kind of understand the way human minds do these things. I mean, I'm describing things I've seen in my experience. I know you recognize them. You know, when we look at our human minds and see patterns, we're not the only one that feels those patterns or experiences those patterns. And so we can be curious about this human experience. And it's useful to know something about these patterns so that as we're experiencing it, so you start experiencing worry. You know, maybe hearing something about worry constructing anxiety makes you more interested in exploring, oh, what's actually going on right now? Oh, the mind is thinking a lot of thoughts and creating this anxiety. Here's the anxiety. So that we can start to move into the investigation of what is happening here and now. So these different flavors of anxiety, worry, fear. One thing they seem to have in common, and I wouldn't necessarily say this is always true, because I think we can reflect back on the past and worry about, oh, did I do that right? Did I make the right choice in the past? So there can be a kind of a worry or an anxiety about the past. But often, worry, anxiety, and fear are related to the future, related to the idea of the future. How will I be perceived in this situation? What will I do in this situation? Will I be able to support myself in this situation? So the often the worry and the thoughts that are associated with anxiety and fear reflect thoughts about the future. And these thoughts then contribute to the emotions. In fact, there's a very tight loop cycle between our thoughts and our emotions. If we start thinking about something we're afraid of and start pondering that, it's likely to create more fear. And then we start thinking about it more. So it's like when we're thinking thoughts about something we're worried or anxious or fearful about. It's like we have our foot on the gas pedal of that emotion. We are adding fuel. We are increasing the speed, momentum of that emotion. And so one very skillful tool that we can use in mindfulness practice around these states is to recognize, are there a lot of thoughts going on? And can I, instead of being interested in the content of the thoughts, can I be interested instead in what does it mean to be a human being? Again, coming back to the human experience, what does it mean to be a human being feeling this experience? So that we don't have to stop the thoughts. We may not be able to stop the thoughts, but we can take our attention a little bit out of the world of all the thoughts and the content and what it means, and bring our attention into the actual this moment experience of being with that state of anxiety, with a mind that's kind of buzzing because it's got so many thoughts going. We can feel that. So checking in, what's the human experience? What's the human experience of this? Seeing if we can take our attention out of the story or the narrative and into the experience. So I do this right now, as especially in the middle of the night, this seems to be happening. I wake up and my mind thinks something like, oh my gosh, Donald Trump is going to be president. What is this country going to do? And the mind starts thinking about it. What can I do? How can I contribute? Can I go to Ohio? You know, it's like, okay, this is the thoughts. What's the feeling? Activation in the body. Agitation through the system. I can be with that. Being in the thoughts. Somehow that worry process, you know, the worry process has diluted us into thinking that worry is going to solve the problem. It fully believes that. And so that's part of why we're caught by it. When we're in the worry, our world has collapsed to the worry and the belief that worrying is the answer. When we can step back and okay, what's going on right now is this charged state. Wow, okay, I can be with this. I can breathe. Yep. Can know this experience. The mind then has a broader perspective from which to contemplate what one does. It's not so helpful to be spinning in that worry with the anxiety. It can be helpful to know this situation creates anxiety, and what might a skillful response to that be? Sometimes the skillful response is simply allowing the anxiety to dissipate and then using our understanding to take some action, using our compassion. Because there's a connection. I mean, that anxiety for me is connected with this sense that so much suffering is going to result if that happens, if Donald Trump is elected president. I feel like that's a direction that's going to create suffering. And I'm going to be transparent here. Usually as a Dharma teacher, I do not bring politics in. But this situation is so out of the ordinary, I cannot in good conscience be balanced about this. You know, I'm going to speak about this. So just to say that I decided at some point, when he became the nominee, I actually decided, this is the action I'm going to take. You know, so this is an action I'm going to take. I'm going to speak about this. I'm going to speak about what I see. You know, first of all, you know, how to work with what's going on around it ourselves, but also what do we do? How do we navigate this? And to point to the breaking of precepts that's going on in our world. So, you know, feeling that anxiety is kind of a signal, right? That something needs to be attended to. Acting from that anxiety, acting from that collapsed world may result in actions that are motivated from that collapsed place. And so when we can be a little more, when we can know it from the human side, we can be present for the experience of anxiety, we can recognize that it's happening, and as we're in that space of knowing, there's more available. What we see in that is that anxiety, for me, that anxiety is partly based on the future thinking that suffering will result. And so, yes, that's a future thought. It is a construction of the mind that suffering will result. And yet, to me, that anxiety is pointing to, in this case, as I open to the feeling, okay, I do want to take some action here. But I don't want to act from that constricted place. I want to act from a place of connection, of love, of caring, of compassion. So the mindfulness that we explore around these states helps us to have a bigger container in which wisdom, compassion, and love and understanding can be available for us. So that we're not just reacting, but we are responding. So I want to move to a kind of an exploration a little bit about how do we meet this with mindfulness? How do we meet these states of mind with mindfulness? I mentioned the kind of basic, one of the most fundamental instructions, which is seeing if you can take your attention out of thoughts associated with anxiety, worry, or fear, and turn towards the human experience. A lot of that human experience, especially with strong emotion, is going to be in the body, is going to be kind of in the torso. There's going to be constriction in the throat, agitation in the area of the heart, maybe vibrating, agitated energy throughout the belly. We can feel that. As we turn or recognize the physical manifestation of the emotion, that can help us to stay here, stay present, be with the emotion. Again, that's a human experience. It's the human experience of those emotions. It's much easier, it can be much easier to be with the physical sensation than it is with the kind of the explosion of ideas and opinions and views that happen in our thoughts. And so it can help to ground us and keep us more present. Gives us maybe a little bit of a distance, a little bit of more space around the state of mind. It also can be helpful if there's a particular pattern that's triggering you or a particular state that's coming frequently. It can be useful to be curious about what is it that is leading there. I mean, another really useful tool around fear, anxiety, worry, especially if they happen a lot for you. I often encourage people to recognize one of three things, one of three states around the anxiety, worry, fear. Notice when it's not there. If you have a habit of being anxious, there will be times that you're not anxious. Consciously recognize that. The Buddha actually encouraged this practice to recognize the absence of difficulty. It helps us because those states, when we're in the midst of those states, again, our world has collapsed to them. And not only do we believe the story that they're telling us, but we also often believe they're always there. That's what's going on right now. That's how I am. I am anxious. And so we identify with it. As we acknowledge, consciously recognize or choose to orient to, not anxious right now, it begins to poke holes in that belief, that delusion that I am anxious. I'm always anxious. So recognize when it's not there. Really helpful. then when it's present, when it's there, recognize when you're caught by it, you know, you're kind of in the world of it. Sometimes we can be caught by it and we can know we're caught by it. That recognition, yep, there's anxiety and I'm caught by it. Yep, okay. Even that little shift can bring a little bit more space. We may still be caught by the fear or the anxiety, but there's a knowing that we're caught by it instead of just being caught by it. So we are being with being caught. So we have a little bit of space around being caught. As we explore, and so that's one. When it's present, notice when you're caught by it and when you're not caught by it. Because sometimes, especially as the practice strengthens, as we begin to get familiar with what does it mean to be with something like anxiety, there we see the mindfulness strengthens to the point where it's like, oh yeah, anxiety's happening. Huh, wow, that's really interesting. This is what it's like to be anxious. This is the feeling. And so we get a taste of not being caught by anxiety. And as we're observing anxiety in that space, a little thought of, oh no, might come in and we're caught. So notice that difference. Caught or not caught. The mind will recognize the difference. Not caught, there can be a space of ease, even delight, actually. It's quite amazing when the mindfulness is strong and observing even something challenging. There can be a feeling of interest, of delight, even happiness. Wow, this is possible to watch this. Wow, that's pretty cool. So there, that as we see we're not caught, we get a little taste of the bigger container of it rather than just the flavor of the caughtness. We get a taste of that, the container which contains the curiosity, the interest, the delight. So when we're not caught, we get a little bit of a different flavor. When we're caught, we feel pretty much the feeling of the anxiety. So noticing that distinction, when it's not there, notice it's absent. When it's present, notice whether we're caught or not caught. In that watching, particularly going between caught and not caught, we might actually see it waver as we explore mindfulness. We might see that, oh yeah, I can be with that, and then suddenly something happens. Often it's a thought arising, an idea, an opinion, a view, and we're caught. So we see that there's a trigger for being caught. Caught doesn't happen of its own. It's not just doing it randomly. There is something going on in our minds that shifts us from not caught to caught. And likewise, there's something going on in our minds that takes us from non-anxious to anxious. There are things happening in the world, of course, and yet what's happening in the world does not have the power to create our emotions in and of itself. That's great news. What's happening in the world does not have the power to create our emotions. What happens is that we take in that information, and then a process goes on in our mind based on our conditioning, based on our beliefs, based on our views, based on our history, that does a little dance with what's going on in the world, and emotions are created from that. So that process of that little dance of what's going on in the world and what's going on in our mind, that's interesting to watch. As we watch that, we start to see that there are often triggers for these states of anxiety, worry, and fear. Something happens in the world, we see something, we remember something. This I think happens a lot, this pattern. You know, we see someone and we react to them, something. And I've seen this, so I see someone, there's something about them that's familiar that reminds me of somebody who treated me badly. So there's the person. Not the person who treated me badly, but there's the person. My mind does the little dance about remembering that other person, the associative nature, and remembering things that that other person did to me, and then the emotion is created. All of this mostly happening below the level of our conscious awareness. And then the emotion of, ooh, I might need to be afraid of that person. Of the person that is not that person. This kind of thing happens a lot. So that little dance of how our minds meet the world and what they do in response to it, that's a lot of what we're interested in watching. So sometimes we can get familiar with particular triggers. Like right now, for me, thinking about Donald Trump is a trigger for anxiety. At this moment, I'm not feeling anxious, which is great to see that I can actually say the name and be balanced about it. You know, maybe because I'm giving a Dharma talk, I'm a little more present here, you know. But when I read the news, I'm starting to see, yes, when I look at headlines, I need to be present. I need to see that headline. Whew, okay, can I be with that? So if we can begin to get familiar with the triggers. So I know now when I open up my iPad to the New York Times, I need to be present for how is the mind in relationship to that content? Because that content can be triggering. Now again, remember that we're not trying to become non-responsive. You know, the exploration of thinking about Donald Trump and not being anxious doesn't mean that I don't still feel and recognize that action, I need to take some action and explore that. It doesn't mean that. Again, you know, when we're caught in anxiety or from our usual perspective of anxiety or fear, when we're in that collapsed world, anxiety and fear are telling us the only way anything happens is if you act out of this anxiety and fear. It believes itself so thoroughly, it thinks that that's the only reason why you would do anything, is if you're afraid or if you're anxious. That's the belief that's embedded in that state, that I am the reason. This anxiety is the reason. Fear is the reason you're going to take action. That's what that state believes. But what we discover as we open to states where we open to the possibility of not having that reactivity, open to recognizing, oh, the thought of Donald Trump does not have to trigger anxiety. What we discover instead, perhaps, is that it triggers compassion, wisdom, connection with wanting to act, to do something. So the broader perspective doesn't take us to a place of non-action. Compassion acts. Wisdom acts. Love acts in this world. Just as anxiety has motivation to do something, to get rid of the anxiety, love and compassion are motivated to act to alleviate suffering in the world. That's the space that we open to as we can find our way to not being so triggered. And it's a process. It doesn't happen quickly. So for me, the exploration of challenging states of mind, it's a years-long process. And there's a lot of bumps in the road. You know, sometimes the mind is in a place where it's much more balanced and able to meet meet the world in a more balanced way. And then other things happen. It's like things pile on and we have less resources. And so we can't meet the world in such a balanced way. And so it's a really bumpy road. We need a lot of patience with this. We can't have the idea, or we can't be buying into the idea that, oh, I see what it's like to meet anxiety without reactivity. I can see what it's like to be not caught by anxiety. This means I'm never going to be caught by anxiety again. Probably not. Probably not. So we have to have a lot of patience with the very gradual nature of the work that happens with this willingness to come into the human experience. We do see pretty quickly the value of it. And so that helps us. That keeps us going. That makes it more possible to continue being curious. And yet we also have to be patient. This is it's a process. I do see with difficult states and reactive emotions that are very familiar, very habitual, that there's a kind of a recognition over time of a greater capacity to work with them. And so there's more confidence that comes. Yes, I can work with this. There's more of a sense of trust and capacity that we have as we practice with it. So I just, the last piece I'll say, I don't have a lot of time for questions, but the last piece I'll say is just reminding you that there are definitely times that that the states of anxiety, worry, and fear are overwhelming, and that our mindfulness doesn't have the capacity to meet them. At that point, the compassionate thing to do is to use some strategies to let go, to see if you can step away from being magnetized to that anxiety, that worry or fear. Strategies like, taking a walk in nature, or putting something different into your mind. Like sometimes I can, if I'm caught in a Donald Trump loop, I can say, okay, let me think about the Dharma talk I have to give this afternoon instead. So actually swapping thoughts. So there's some strategies that we can use. If there's a lot of overwhelm, I encourage you to find some go-to strategy so you don't have to think. When you're overwhelmed, it's like you need something that's like, overwhelm, go here. So that you don't have to think, what are the things I could do? I'm overwhelmed. It's like, pick something. Find a go-to tool. Maybe it's taking a few deep breaths, or maybe it's putting your attention on your butt in a chair, or putting your attention on your feet on the ground. Something neutral, usually, I find, rather than trying to switch to something pleasant. Because the mind being caught in that negativity, if you try to put something pleasant on top, sometimes that state is like, oh no, you're not going to cover me up, and it kind of resurges. So I find neutralities, coming to something neutral as a go-to strategy, really, really helpful. So there's a couple of minutes. There's not a lot of time. I wanted to leave a little more time, but there's a couple of minutes if there's any comments or questions, anything you'd like to say. Yeah, and could you use the mic?
So what do you mean by neutrality?
What do I mean by neutrality? So I mean something that doesn't have a spin to it, or tends to not take you into a spin. So a neutral physical experience might be the sensations of your feet on the ground, or the contact of your hands, something like that. For me, if I was walking, the contact of the foot on the ground, that was a pretty neutral experience. Sometimes you can try the breath, and if you take controlled deep breaths, that can be a kind of a place of neutrality. But often when there's a lot of anxiety or fear, the breath is involved. And so sometimes the breath is not such a good go-to place when you are in a charged or overwhelmed state. And so I often suggest people find something outside of this core area of the body as your go-to place. It could be contact points of the body. It might be using seeing. Another strategy I find really helpful as a neutral strategy, this is actually one of my favorites, is it's using seeing. So open your eyes and let's try it right now. So look at a corner. Find a corner, not a corner of the room, just some place where two lines come together. Find a corner and then find another corner. And then another one. And you move your head while you're doing this. And then another one. We'll do this for like 20 seconds. So just look, connect, and then move on. Look, connect, and move on. So that is an activity that takes you out of the world of thought, connects you to something for a brief moment, but not long enough that you can like forget and move into thought. So every second, move, 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 move. That's a very powerful strategy if you're overwhelmed. So, and now we have to stop. So thank you for your attention. And I know there's a group from a class here, and I'm happy to take some time with the group from the class for a few minutes afterwards. So thank you.